ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 20, entitled Vali Maharaj Surrenders the Universe. Text number 13.
Isavayutama sloka
Naji hasati yajasa
This
brahmachari
Either
Uttama sloka
is Lord Vishnu.
Who is worshipped by Vedic prayers?
Not.
Jihasati.
Desires to give up.
Yet.
Because.
Yasaha.
Perpetual fame.
Hadva.
After killing.
Ma. Me.
Enam.
All this land.
Hare will take away.
You did invite.
Sayita
will lie down.
Nihataha
being killed.
Maya by me.
Translation. If this Brahmana really is Lord Vishnu, who is worshipped by Vedic hymns, he would never give up his widespread reputation. Either he would lie down, having been killed by me, or he would kill me in a fight. Purport. Bali Maharaj's statement that Vishnu would lie down, having been killed, is not the direct meaning. For Vishnu cannot be killed by anyone. Lord Vishnu can kill everyone, but he cannot be killed. Thus, the real meaning of the words lie down is that Lord Vishnu would reside within the core of Bali Maharaj's heart. Lord Vishnu is defeated by a devotee, though through devotional service, otherwise, no one can defeat Lord Vishnu. Om Jyati Manasya Gyanandra Salakaya Shakshura Militanya Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamyam Dadati Swapanantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srimad Bhagavatam describes that within the universe, as the population of the universe becomes about, there are two distinct classes of men, namely the suras and the asuras, or those who are devotionally inclined and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and submit to His will and plan, and those who are rebellious and who are independent and who are demoniac by nature, who desire to exploit the material energy for their own enjoyment. Outside the plan of the Lord. There's also enjoyment inside the plan of the Lord. Like the demigods may also have a desire to enjoy, but all within what is sanctioned and blamed by the Lord. So that makes a distinction. That's why sometimes Vasatsarupa Maharaj raised that question in one of his books, which had the title, Am I a Demon or a Vaishnava? And that's a very good question, really. It's like a perennial question for all of us, because we're in this transition from possibly being demoniac going towards being devotees. And it's not all so clear-cut what we are. We can see that demoniac tendencies remain within us. The 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is an important chapter because it describes the divine and demoniac qualities. And we can recognize something in ourselves, like thinking about harsh speech as one of the qualities of the demons. And it's not easy to avoid harsh speech. It comes out quite natural. So some of these qualities are within us. Bali Maharaj is one who had taken his birth in the family of the Daityas, the Asuras, basically. But obviously, still within every family, there are individuals. And each individual has his own inclination. So although one may take his birth in the family of demons, still one may have a devotional inclination. And one may be inclined to become a devotee. Some of the influences, obviously, of our background are also there. Some demoniac culture has lived in the families of the Asuras for a long, long time. In this age, who can say that there is no Asura influence in his family? That would be very easy to say. But the truth is that so many Asuric activities. Who was born a vegetarian? If I look at the proverbs in my language, many of them are not vegetarian. What can I say? That alone sort of says something. What to do? So, these influences are deep and subtle. We see that even Prahlad Maharaj, who took his family in the birth of the Daityas and who became such an amazing devotee, it is said that Prahlad had been saved by the Lord who appeared as Hiranyakasipu. Hiranyakasipu was extremely angry. No one could pacify him. Even Lakshmi Devi would not go near him because she had never seen a form like this and she was not quite sure if he actually was her husband or what. So Lakshmi would not go near. No one would go near. And Lord Brahma sort of moderated the situation and took Prahlad and pushed him forward and said, well, he appeared because of you, so you go and pacify him with prayers, which Prahlad did. And then the Lord placed his lotus hand upon the head of Prahlad, and Prahlad became purified, it said, from the remnants of his demoniac birth, which is quite amazing because what a devotee Prahlad was. What a devotee he was. Bali Maharaj, he had some family relation with Prahlad Maharaj. He was a few generations further ahead. So in that way, something was in him also. There was a devotee in him. But he was born in a demoniac family, and at that time, the devas, headed by Indra, had committed neglect towards their spiritual master. Indra had neglected his spiritual master. The result was that his spiritual master had just withdrawn from the situation. Indra had simply, he had not paid so much attention to his spiritual master. When his spiritual master arrived, Indra was being glorified, surrounded by all kinds of lower celestial beings who spent their time glorifying the principal demigods. And all they describe the glory of Indra and the amazing feats that Indra has performed and all the wonderful things Indra has done. Yes, yes. Correct. Mm, yes, indeed. I have, yes, yes, yes. Mm. Ah, continue, please. So Indra was indulging in being glorified, and in the process forgot to give preference and importance to his spiritual master. And this was considered an offense. So Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the devatas, withdrew. And then there was a reaction. And the reaction was that the devatas no longer had the piety, the demigods no longer had the piety to hold the high position of living in great opulence in the heavenly planets. Because such positions of opulence and leadership and ruling positions are all the result of previous pious activities. So this offense destroyed the piety of the devatas, and as a result they fell from that position, they lost it. And the devatas, the asuras, were rising to power. They also did their pujas and they also did their austerities, although their austerities were not motivated by pious desires. They did pious activity. So demons can also give in charity. Demons can also do good work. Demons can also work for the welfare of humanity. And yet, but deep down in their heart, they care about self-aggrandizement. Aham bhogi ishvaroham, it is said. Aham bhogi ishvaroham. That is the mentality. I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. These two are the roots of the demoniac mentality. So the demons certainly had that mentality, although they were ready to perform austerity, to worship superior deities, and they were doing sacrifices like that. And then they got the benefit of these pious activities, and the result was is that just coinciding with the fall of the devatas who lost their position of piety, the asuras were rising, and headed by Pali Maharaj, captured the throne of Indra, which was a problem, because after all, there is a particular order within the universe, there is a plan within the universe, and that plan is the plan of the Supreme Lord, who has inspired Lord Brahma from within at the time of creation to make 14 planetary systems, and the higher regions are simply meant for pious souls. And within the higher regions, the Vedic hymns are always heard. They're always chanted by different sages. Worship is always going on, whereas as we go in the lower regions of the universe, less and less. And here, there is still God consciousness on this planet, but if you go a bit lower, below this planet, then no God consciousness at all. Total materialism. And here, God consciousness is there, but at the same time, it's kind of a watered-down version, one might say, compared to what's going on in the heavenly planets. So when the devatas were no longer in control of the heavenly planets and the demons were in control, the order of the universe was becoming upset. Basically, the piety that is meant to emanate from the demigods throughout the universe was obstructed. And yeah, the demons, they were happy to enjoy the heavenly kingdom. Yay! And we are having a great time here. All the facilities for us. The kingdom of the gods. Endless. So, yes, naturally they had an enjoying mentality and not a serving mentality. The demigods, although they may also have an enjoying mentality, simultaneously there is a service attitude where they are working for the benefit of all living beings, and thus they send benedictions to lower beings. The demigods are very powerful. They control the forces of nature. We, poor nature, what can we do against nature? Wind, rain, waves, and or the earth sometimes shaking, volcanoes, so many forces in nature, lightning, you name it, or just the size of a mountain, or the size of an ocean. All these things are enormous. So many powers within nature that are very much beyond ours. But the demigods simply can control. In 1975, the Cold War between America and Russia was extremely tense, and both nations were dug in various positions with nuclear weapons, and the whole world was just sort of talking about the nuclear bomb. That was a big thing, right? And we had big demonstrations. I was also part of it, against nuclear energy, right? I mean, 40,000 youth marching for, ban the bomb, and no nuclear energy at all, no Kuberg or nothing, right? Down with these things. Ban the bomb signs everywhere. So now that's not so much in the foreground. These days, there's a nuclear energy, but it's not it can happen any moment. But in the 70s, 75, that was a big issue. And it came to Prabhupada. It was the devotees were talking about, yes. Not only when the bomb will drop, will it destroy practically everything? And Prabhupada said, it cannot destroy everything. No, Srila Prabhupada, these bombs, they can destroy the whole planet. Prabhupada said, not really. It cannot really destroy the whole planet, They're overestimating their power. They won't be able to really blow up the whole planet. Yeah, but even then, even if there will be survivors, Srila Prabhupada, then there will be the radioactive fallout after, right? And it will just kill all the survivors who will slowly become affected by the radiation and mutated and, maybe get three heads and six toes and God knows, right? What else? All those horrible things. And then Prabhupada said, that the demigods, they will adjust it. They will adjust. So the devotees, they don't care. They simply carry on their devotional activities, and then the demigods, they will adjust all these things. Do you know that in Kuberg they're throwing every year double the amount of radioactive waste into the ocean? Than what is allowed by the World Health Organization, and how the World Health Organization anyway figured out what is the right amount to throw into the ocean. I don't know. And do you know that they pack it in drums, and that these drums are packed into concrete, and that concrete has a duration of life anywhere between 80 and 125 years maximum. And did you know that the toxic effect of radioactive waste is measured in different grades, and that grade 1 lasts 50,000 years, and grade 2 lasts 300,000 years, and that grade 1 is enough to seriously damage and kill and cause cancer and all kinds of fun like that. And grade 2 is still enough to bring about leukemia. So, what did they say? 80-125 years, the concrete, and 50,000, 300,000, And they keep on dumping the barrels into the ocean. What will be the future of the Cape for the grandchildren? I don't know. I don't know. The funny thing is that those who are dumping, all these things into the ocean think, anyway, it's not our problem. That's, you know, that's for the future. Little do they know that they themselves will have to take birth again. And exactly in those highly contaminated areas, right, where the radioactivity is to the max, those same people that threw the drums in the ocean, they will just live on the edge of the ocean, just where the radioactivity will emerge. Karma is interesting. Like that. So there is an order within the universe. This order within the universe was upset when the demons rose to an undue position and got suddenly the position of the demigods. So then we see Paritrana Yusadhanam Vinasya Saduskritam Dharmasam Starpanatya Sambhavami Yuke. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in this world whenever there's a decline of religious principles, and to annihilate the demons and to establish the principles of religion. The Lord appears. So that is the situation. Krishna came. Krishna came. Yada yada hi dharmasya klani bhavati bhavata. He came at that time when irreligion became predominant. Then he came in a perfect way. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is abhigya. It is explained in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Jamadiyasyetam yati taratas chatesva vigya swarat tene brahmanidaya adhikavi uyanti atsuriya. The Supreme Personality is so powerful he can even bewilder the demigods. And he is the origin of everything that is existing. And he is fully conscious of everything. So, since the Supreme Lord was abhigya, fully conscious of everything, he was fully conscious of the heart of Bali Maharaj. He was fully conscious of the need of the universe. So he fully had an understanding of the situation. We always think we understand the situation. But actually, we see only the tip of the iceberg and never really what's going on all levels. We can't see. That is our problem. We cannot see. I may look, you know, like at the person sitting right opposite of me. I may know his name. I may know something about his life. And I may know something about his nature. And I may think, I figured him out. Yeah. Okay. Put a number on him. Right? But the truth is that I don't know. I don't know who he was in his last life. I have no idea. I don't know who he was in the last 100 lives. I have no idea. No idea. Nor do I know what he will be in the next 100 lives. But I don't know. Or if he will go back to Godhead this lifetime. I hope so. But I don't know. I don't know. How can I know? But Krishna knows all these things. So when Krishna is acting, all the factors are part of the equation, not a few. When we are acting, there's always a few factors that we are overseeing, and then we do something, and then, you know, well, then we hope, you know, we hope it's all going to work out, you know, like, okay, you know, God, and, you know, may God help me, you know, like, we hope that everything's going to be okay. Even after we've made all the plan and executed it perfectly, you know, like, oh, now I hope it will all work out. All kinds of things, fingers crossed, and so on. Because, but Krishna made the perfect arrangement. So Krishna is certainly interested in the good of all. And Krishna is certainly interested in uplifting the entire universe. And Krishna is always making arrangements for the spirituality within the universe to be available to all, and that the spiritual path remains open. But at the same time, Krishna is willing to go out of his way for one individual. And that's why Krishna appeared in this special form. Bali Maharaj, although a demon, we are going a few yugas back, and in a few yugas before, the period, the time was still very, very, very different from now. The predominating atmosphere was Vedic culture. In the beginning, the Vedas are emanating from the mouth of Brahma. And through the sages, these Vedas, this Vedic knowledge is just like emanating throughout the entire universe. So the entire universe is then organized around Vedic knowledge, and even the asuras externally are within that culture. So therefore Bali Maharaj was within that culture. And when Bali Maharaj was seated on the throne as the ruler of the heavenly kingdom of the three worlds now, before him appeared a brahmana. So brahmanas, they can ask for charity, that is, and kshatriyas, kings, are meant to give. So Bali Maharaj was aware of that culture, and even the asuras would do so, although if the brahmana was sort of asking something too much, they may not have done it. But in this case, it was not just the brahmana. He was a brahmachari, a young boy as well, innocent. This innocent boy, innocent brahmin boy, extremely beautiful, in a deer skin, top knot. He has a straw belt around his waist, and like from these sandal, peg shoes, sandals, and a parasol as well, a straw parasol. I mean, he looked amazing, sort of like endearing, and the kind of person everyone wants to help. That, yeah, if he asks you something, of course, what you want, my boy? Yeah, welcome. Oh, three steps of land. Oh, only asking, only three steps of land, three steps. Don't be foolish now. I know you are young. You don't fully understand, you know, who I am. I mean, you can ask me for something more than that. You want? You ask me for a planet? I'll give you a planet. You want a planet? I'll give you one. Any planet you want. Take a planet. No. The boy said, no, I'm a brahmachari. Brahmachari, what do I need? I have no need for a planet. I only need three steps of land so that I can lie down. So please grant me three steps of land. Only three steps. Oh, is that really all you want? Well, all right. And if that's what you want, I'll grant you that. And then, but then the spiritual master said, no, don't do it. Don't do it. He is Vishnu and he will take everything. See, the spiritual master of the demons. The interesting thing, they also have a spiritual master who's also performing sacrifices, they're also within Vedic culture, but he's a demon. And he is, therefore, doing all these things only for solidifying his own position as the enjoyer and the controller. So therefore the spiritual master advised Bali Maharaj not to surrender to Vishnu. Don't give it to him, he'll take everything in two steps. Then he gave an argument. He knew that Bali would do it anyway. So he said, like, no, he'll take everything. He knew that Bali didn't care. It's like he's getting very worried. He could see there's some detachment in Bali and he's ready to give. And this is a big problem, because then my comfortable position as his spiritual master, where I get, you know, I live a cushy life, and they're having it good right now, and we don't want to rock the boat, right? So don't give. No. Then he said, no, the two steps, he will take everything. And then, where will he put his third step? And then when he will not be able to provide him his third step, that will be a great offense. Don't do it. So Bali was four, and still he did it. And indeed, Vamana grew in size, and just like with one step, he took half the universe, and like the other one, the whole universe, and his toe cracked the shell of the universe. A drop of the causal ocean came in, washed his lotus foot. The reddish kumkum from his lotus foot came in the water, and that became the Ganga. And then he said, and now what about the third step? So it, and then the third step, yeah, Bali Maharaj said, put it on my head. And then, the Lord was not satisfied with that and arrested him for not fulfilling his promise. And he was in the noose of a serpent, and he could think, my spiritual master was right. I should have listened to Sukracharya. Why did I not listen to him? I was such a fool. I should have just taken his advice. See, now I'm in misery. But he did not do that. No, he remained faithful. Whatever the Lord desires, whatever he does, I will accept it. That was ultimately Bali's glory. And we see that with that Bali Maharaj, with that attitude, rose above his demoniac background. And Bali, Bali Vyasik Vayam, Bali counts as one of the 12 Mahajans. He became a Mahajan, means like there are 12 personalities in the universal history who stand out as teachers for all, who are identified as 12 major teachers, Mahajans, to whom everyone turns for inspiration, and Bali is one of them. So it's interesting for those, at least for those who came from a somewhat demoniac background. It's interesting, of course. Besides me, I don't know about anyone else, but and maybe at least one other one. But so Bali Maharaj had that mood of whatever may come, I will accept it as the mercy of the Lord, and I will remain faithful in service to him. So that is the saving grace, and that's the bottom line. And that bottom line is really our bottom line. Like, whatever may come, whatever it is, and it is something. The things that can happen in the material world are, it can be really intense, but whatever may come, it will not shake my faith in the Lord, and it will not shake my dedication. These two things, you know, like, yes, when something heavy happens, dedication may remain, but faith can be shaken. You know, is the Lord really merciful? Is he kind? Is he cruel? I mean, then is it all true? Is there really a God of love? But how can the God of love act in such a way that he is the cause of so much suffering? It cannot be. Then is there a God at all? Then is this whole thing true, actually? Ding, the domino came and all the stones fall over. Turn, 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 turn. No. The Lord is all good. We just can't see. He sees the bigger picture. What do we see? We see just a tiny little corner. We see a little corner. It is said that Arjuna, Arjuna could, one thing in the battle of Kurukshetra that he really could not swallow very well was one particular day when Arjuna was occupied on one side of the battlefield. And at that time, they chose Abhimanyu to enter into the fight. Abhimanyu was a young boy. He's just turned 16. And Abhimanyu was very expert, an amazing fighter, and he had learned how to enter into a closed formation by mantra. So they had the idea that we'll go into the ranks of the opposing army. And Abhimanyu goes in front, opens, makes an opening with his skill and his mantras. And then all the others go right behind, and we all go in. But what happened is Abhimanyu went in, and immediately it closed, like the boom of a parking garage. You know, you try to tailgate and go through. That's not so easy, you know. They talk about that, right? But you try it, you know, most of the time. Yeah, bang, you know, the boom is right there in front of you. That's, God, didn't work. Try again. You can read about it on the internet, how to tailgate. In Africa, you have a chance. In Joburg, I wouldn't try. The spikes come out in Joburg. Spikes, you know, there's big spikes come out, you know, in Tranjogo, UK Tonians. Anyway, so they tried to tailgate and it didn't work. The boom slammed into their face, and Abhimanyu was alone in the opposing army, and he fought a great fight, and they shot him like cowards, you know, like a whole group just killed him, like from behind, etc. It wasn't a fair fight. Anyway, when Arjuna came back, the mood was a little bit kind of like, how are we going to tell him? Who's going to tell him? No one wanted to tell him. When Arjuna found out, he just couldn't accept it that Abhimanyu was killed. That was like such a thing, you know, that Abhimanyu had been killed. So it is said that Arjuna couldn't get over it. And I forgot exactly who gave him this, one sage, but I forgot which one, gave him the power to see where Abhimanyu had gone. And what turned out, Abhimanyu was in his previous life the son of a Gandharva who had come into this world due to some curse for a short time, and therefore returned quickly and had the benediction that he could quickly return to his original position. So he had returned. And Arjuna, it is said, was invisibly witnessing Abhimanyu, and that he had returned to his original position. And Abhimanyu, it is said that at one point, Arjuna was invisible. He was invisible by some arrangement, but he was not unsmellable. And the human bodies, we know them, they carry some scent, right? And the heavenly bodies don't. So then Abhimanyu, in his Gandharva form, said, "What is this? What is this smell here? Where is this coming from?" It was his father. That broke Arjuna's attachment. I was like, my God. Yeah, then Arjuna, okay, could let go of emotions. What to say, you know, like, we are like, we cannot oversee. Yeah? We cannot oversee who someone was in the last life. Yeah, we cannot oversee. We just see this tiny little one square on the chessboard, so small as our vision. And from that one square vision, from our little square vision, we see disasters. And we just like shake our fist to the sky. It's not fair. I mean, how could you do this to me and to us? No, there is no God. If there is a God that is just, how could he allow all this suffering in the world? How could he? I mean, you know, it may be the year 2018 when a radioactive wave washes over the beach, right, here in Cape Town, and sort of floods a whole bunch of houses, and a whole quarter of Cape Town gets just wiped out by heavy radioactive contamination, and you know, have to suffer horrible things. May not die so quick, may, you know, suffer from their three heads and God knows, seven legs and what else. And then people will say, how can there be a God and that such a thing can happen? So yeah, there is a God. And he's the God of justice also. And you guys, you threw all that stuff in the ocean, not caring at all. So, got rid of that and got enough power to play with our iPads. Yes. Sweet. Yeah. And the whole cave may get a little bit, even we might get a little bit if we haven't gone back to God, because after all, we used that electricity from Cuba. Yeah. So, see, in this way, we can see how everything is just. There is no injustice within the universe. No injustice at all. It's only in our eyes, because we cannot see the full picture. So yes, we have to broaden that vision gradually. Udarati, broader intelligence, see with broader intelligence, broader than our eyes can see. So Bhagavatam stretches our intelligence to see broader than our eyes can see, until we come to the point that we accept somehow or other. I cannot understand how, but it is all part of the all good plan of the Lord. And as it's stated in Bhagavad Gita, that one who does good will never be overcome by evil. So that's a very important point. Because it seems many times that one who does good gets overcome by evil. But it means that if a person has done devotional service, cannot be lost. That is not lost. Even, you know, when devotees die, even when devotees are killed, you know, sometimes we've seen, then Krishna will take care of that soul. Krishna takes care of the soul and never neglects the soul, always. Always. That soul continues on a glorious journey. So we cannot see, and therefore we sit here gloomy and have a terrible funeral and feel like totally like depressed, but actually that soul continues on a glorious destination. Like that. We should never lose our faith in Krishna's goodness and never lose our dedication. And that is the example of Bali Maharaj, the Mahajan, the great devotee. Okay, thank you. Questions, comments?
I just want to make sure I understand correctly. Is Bali Maharaj a Nitya Siddha?
No, no. Bali Maharaj is not a Nitya Siddha. Bali Maharaj is a Sadhana Siddha. Nitya Siddha means eternally perfect devotee who descends from the spiritual world and who is sent into the material world for a particular mission. Sadhana Siddha is a devotee who becomes perfect by mercy received from senior Vaishnavas and by following a particular sadhana. He is sadhana and kripa siddha combined. because it went very quick. So Kripa Siddha means there's three types of Siddha. Nitya Siddha, eternal perfection that was already there, descended from the spiritual. Sadhana Siddha, by devotional service we become perfect. And Kripa Siddha, even although we didn't deserve it still, we didn't do anything to deserve it, still we got the mercy. So combination of sadhana and Kripa Siddha.
But someone like Arjuna has
Nitya Siddha, although Arjuna, Krishna says, Bhavanam, Vidyatitani. So many births, Arjuna, you and I have been together. I remember all of them, you don't. So that's clear. Yeah. Arjuna, yes.
I've read that in Bhagavatam it said that Prahlad Maharaj is also classified as Nitya Siddha. But we know in his previous life he was a materialist. Hmm? Before Prahlad. Or is that a special arrangement?
Yeah. Prahlad Maharaj is another category. Prahlad Maharaj was all along a great, powerful devotee, and whatever was there. You see that sometimes in previous lives and this stuff. So, Prahlad Maharaj, other category.
That's a special arrangement.
Special arrangement. Whatever the arrangement is, it's unclear.
Mm-hmm. So, the whole pastime with him, you know, with the prostitute in the woods and the.
Was a face, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so many years of his life, not a Vaishnava, and yet he is identified as a great liberated soul. So, yeah, and saying that he always was a liberated soul. So it says sometimes, apparently, Brihaspati came as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, was a hardcore Mayavadi. How could he be? He says he was a devotee. The spiritual master of the demigods, how could he come back as a Mayavadi? But all these things are going on.
Hare Krishna. I was just wondering, we see in spiritual life that it's such a, the big part of we're trying to do is we're trying to purify our existence, and that it seems like very much a psychological process in one hand, because it's very much in terms of the mind, that we have to purify our mind, cultivate good habits, devotional habits, and then like making that, saying this idea that whatever devotional service we perform, it carries on. And so I was just wondering, it seems that in one sense, because the mind is also a material thing, because I mean the soul is obviously always pure, so then I just find it strange that our the devotional success depends on a material thing, basically, so it seems like it depends on the condition of our mind.
It doesn't, but it's like this. I explained yesterday how when we come into the material world and we become embodied, the soul enters into the material body, which consists of subtle, gross body and subtle body. It happens that the soul goes into a dormant state there. So the soul is not involved. The mind takes over the activities of thinking, feeling, and willing. And basically our whole experience is now governed by the mind. Then we are in the world since time immemorial. And the same mind is with us, life after life. So there's unlimited impressions within the mind stored there from many, many sinful activities. All these are bijas, these are seeds, and these seeds are leading to a particular inclination, it is said. This inclination, because there are so many sinful seeds from so many sinful reactions in our heart, there is a general inclination towards sin. So this is a handicap. So we, you know, you see sometimes these races where the paraplegics are getting into sports, special wheelchairs, and you know, they also race or whatever. So it's like they're racing. Of course, they can't really compete with someone who's not handicapped. So a contaminated mind is a handicap. And it can, but it can never overcome devotional service. One cannot, devotional service cannot be overcome by karma. So it is the karma that's stored within the mind and that covers the mind. But karma can make it difficult to apply ourselves to devotional service. The medicine works, but, you know, like if a patient is extremely lazy and half mad, then maybe he won't take his tablets. And the result is that the medicine won't really work. So, like that, the problem of the karma in the mind is we will not apply ourselves to the devotional service. Therefore, we need to purify the mind so that we can take better advantage of devotional service, because the mind is manda sumanda matiyo manda bhakya. We are very lazy. It's other things like, do I really have to do devotional service? Service? Can it just be devotion? And rather, I like the the translation of bhakti as devotion. I like it more than the translation as devotional service. Because with service, you may have to do work. And with bhakti translated as devotion, all you have to do is be feely about it. I feel so much devotion. Krishna, Krishna. It's much nicer than a translation like devotional service, you know, peel potatoes. Oh gosh. So it's hard work. So we can see the laziness is deep in us, the resistance. On Janmashtami, I gave a lecture on the verse Jayati Janani Vaso Janmavada Devapinandanai. Then that verse is saying that Jayati Janani Vaso. Janani Vaso is referring to Krishna, who's the resort of all living beings. And Jayati means he is victorious. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that it's in the present tense. He said it's not in the future. It's not a prayer asking for the Lord to be victorious. No, he is victorious. So Krishna is always victorious. But meanwhile, we're sitting there in our consciousness. We're sitting in the middle of our consciousness with reluctance. No, I don't want to surrender. No. No, I don't want to do this service. No, actually, no. I don't really want to chant Hare Krishna. I don't. No. Do I really have to limit myself to only prasadam? Can I have some, you know, do we have to be so fanatic? Some chocolate, please. can we stretch it a little? So this reluctance is very strong. But then, wherever Krishna just penetrates into that consciousness, and just little by little breaks down that reluctance with his personal pious presence. Either his presence or his paraphernalia, everywhere, more and more, it goes into our consciousness. And little by little, the reluctance is breaking down. Although we're holding on to it, I'm not giving up yet. In that way. Jayati Janani Vasu Chanmavada Devaki Nandanavi.
So the idea that when we perform devotional service and that devotional service isn't lost, it's not like just a good impression on the mind, it's not like something stored in the mental faculty.
It's it awakens the soul. The soul actually wakes up and the soul begins to reclaim its original functions, thinking, feeling, and willing, and take it away from the mind, little by little. Waking up means that gradually thinking, feeling and willing will start happening again on the platform of the soul. The end. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.